Where there once was water, oh, the sky is black. Where there once was water, oh, the earth is cracked. And we hope and pray it's coming back.
You're hearing a sample of a song by Central Coast singer-songwriter Aaron English, the title track for an upcoming feature-length documentary film about California's critical ongoing drought. It's called Where There Once Was Water. The film is a passion project for local photographer turned filmmaker Brittany App, who says she set out to document our vanishing water supply and ended up discovering a story really more complex than she ever could have thought. Brittany App joins us in studio today to talk about California's past, present, and future water prospects, as well as her upcoming film that is currently in production. Welcome to Issues and Ideas.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I imagine I should say congratulations. You're also fresh off a successful fundraising campaign that you did online.
Indeed. It's been really exciting.
Yeah, because not everyone's successful with those.
No.
And so was there any nail-biting points? Or
I think most of the nail-biting happened in preparation for the Kickstarter launch, because I did as much homework as I could to find out, you know, what is going to make a really successful Kickstarter campaign. Because you put so much effort into it, and then you want it to be successful so that you can make your film or make your book or
right.
whatever your creative project is that you're finding funding for. So it just the donations just kept coming in, and local folks were so wonderful to help spread the word.
And that's got to feel good, too. It sort of energizes you just to do the project itself.
Yeah. It reminded me and assured me that people want this film to happen. You know, people want to
yeah.
see this film, and people realize that this is an important story to tell. So,
when was your light bulb moment when you realized that this was more – this project was larger than something you could just capture in photos, that it needed to be a feature-length documentary film?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know if there was an exact moment, but it was about 6 months ago. Actually, no, there probably was. We were on a family vacation up near Hume Lake at the same time as the Rough Fire was happening near Kings Canyon, and that fire just went on and was virtually unstoppable because it was in such rough territory, hence the name. And so I was up there with my family and I was taking pictures, you know, and I'd been working on this project as a still photography project for a couple years already. And I realized, like, the smoke billowing up into the air and the smokiness, like, around the lake as families are trying to just play in the water. This is more than I can really capture just with stills. And then combined with all my previous thoughts that how do you even photograph groundwater disappearing, or, you know, how some of these things it's really hard to tell just with a still photograph. And so I started shooting video just for fun, really, when we were up on vacation.
And you
had
some
time lapses. I had all the gear with me because I knew we'd be up there and I knew I would want to shoot anyway. And we knew that the fire was happening. And actually, while we were up there, the entire area was evacuated.
I remember that.
The fire jumped the road. Everybody needs to go. And my whole family we called it the evacuation vacation.
I can, yeah.
So that was the turning
point.
Laugh
about
it
now, I guess. Right. But that fire was devastating. And Hume Lake is there so close to our majestic Sequoia Redwoods.
Yeah.
And they're not doing well in this drought either. How, this is such a huge topic.
Mm-hmm.
How do you narrow down the different aspects that you want to focus on?
I've been learning that as I go, because it is so huge and it's so overwhelming. And now that I've decided I'm going to make a film, what is the story and how do I focus that so that it's digestible, you know, because I want to make a film that touches our hearts and speaks to each of us on an individual level and inspires us to kind of pick and choose, like, what can we do individually and collectively to start making changes in our behaviors that will end up as big changes. So I've realized the best approach to this film is to go with solutions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus on the solutions. And I almost feel like it's going to be chopped up into little chapters. You know, here's the water subsidies chapter. let's look at that, because what's going on in that department with the billionaire farmers in the valley, that's not healthy and that should not continue. And we need to talk about that. And then let's talk about the water privatization and what Nestle and similar companies are doing all over our state, but also all over the world, in hopes of kind of guzzling up all of our water so they can sell it back to us in plastic bottles. That's not right. Let's talk about that, you know, and how. And there's some groups like the Story of Stuff Project. I was able to interview Steve Wilson, who's the campaigns director, and they are in the process of really kind of outing, you know, Nestle on all of this behavior, and are currently suing the Forest Service in San Bernardino County for not enforcing a permit that expired in the 80s that Nestle's been using to pull water out of the ground.
Is Nestle Arrowhead?
That is in the Arrowhead Springs area, yes. So that's the old – it's kind of changed names and changed ownerships. The original permit was issued to Arrowhead and is now – and that company has now become Nestle. It's all kind of very like, how is this even still happening? So – and looking at chapters – and then a big one, of course, is our food, you know, and how do we grow our food and what
because
food do we choose to eat?
Early on in the drought, there was what was called almond shaming, you know, and then as people looked into it, they realized, well, it's a little murkier than just almonds.
Right.
And so I imagine as you travel around the state, we have a huge state.
We have a huge state.
As you know, it's a country in and of itself. I bet you get very different perspectives of what the drought means, how we got here.
Mm-hmm. I bet. And who's the bad guy?
Who's the bad guy?
Right.
And as you talk to people, you hear, wow, there's a lot of history to this. There's a lot of right now to this. And as you're finding that you want to focus on where are we going with this?
What's working? What isn't working? You know, what kind of innovative solutions have people already implemented? And what results are they getting? And that's what's really exciting for me, because this has been my home. I've grown up in California, most of the time on the Central Coast. I was born down in Newport Beach, but since I was three, I've lived in San Luis County. So this state is very much home to me, and it's very dear to me. And I think as a Californian, as a young person, I always thought, well, there's plenty of water, clearly, because there's towns and people are happy and there's lakes and rivers and everybody's got water, so there's no issue. Right. But clearly there's an issue, and we have a plumbing system in this state that's not replicated anywhere else in the world.
No.
And that's not necessarily going to last, because those technologies are antiquated compared to how smart we are and how much we can do in the future moving forward.
When you say plumbing system, you mean taking a lot of the water that falls in the northern part of the state and moving it to the southern
Yeah, half. Our aqueducts are like nobody else has this crazy intricate of a plumbing system. One of the most interesting people I've talked to so far is Dan Beard. He is a former commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation, and he's become a bit of a rogue lately. He wrote a book called Deadbeat Dams, and it is the modern and much more digestible version of Cadillac Desert. I highly recommend.
Which I'm in the middle of right now.
Oh,
yeah.
You are?
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay, so if you go from Cadillac Desert and you jump into Deadbeat Dams, Dan Beard gives you the updated, concise, here's what's going on right now and here's how bad it still really is version of that humongous book that you're halfway through.
Yeah, that's why I'm only halfway through it.
I had to take a break in the middle of that book. I'm like, okay, summer break from Cadillac Desert, because that's intense.
It is. But Brittany, I'm wondering, you mentioned all the varying views. Have any of the bad guys been a surprise to you, or the perspectives turned out to not be what you thought would come out of these people's mouths?
Well, I do have to say that I'm still at such an early stage in this project that a lot of those kind of moments, I think, are still to come. What I've found in my research so far, and like with the almond issue, like you said, yeah, poor almonds. I mean, they got really a bad rap, but there's certain crops that do really well in California and make a lot of money for California.
Right.
So we need to look at the whole picture, you know, financially. Like alfalfa, for example, is not a moneymaker for California, but it uses a huge amount of water.
An enormous amount. Mm-hmm.
We don't need to be growing that here. It can grow elsewhere better. you know. So we need to kind of look at the whole picture, and I'm excited to talk to people who specialize in that, you know, crop science. Like, what should we grow here? What should we not grow here, and why? Let's talk about that.
And we have some of the world's best brains on that very topic. Yeah. UC Davis, Cal Poly. And,
yeah, you know, right here at Cal Poly. There's so many people I'm excited to talk to at Cal Poly. And I do a lot of work with them on the photography side of things already, so it's nice to kind of have those, you know, be plugged into some of those conversations already.
How is the shift for you from still photography to moving pictures, as it was once was called?
It's really exciting. It's really exciting. So I've made a couple of short films, mostly just kind of for fun over the years. A couple years ago, I did the 5-gallon challenge, which was my version of the ALS ice bucket challenge.
Right.
And that went a little bit viral on YouTube, which was exciting to watch. But compared to what I'm doing now, these were like minuscule little film projects. And so jumping into this, which is my style, I think, you know, hey, I want to make a film. Let's go feature length and let's choose the most complicated issue possible.
it's been really 60,
exciting.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. It's been really exciting. I have a ton to learn, but I feel most alive when I'm learning and when I'm trying something new and when I'm really pushing my own kind of comfort boundaries. And there's no way I'll ever be an expert, right, on any of the pieces of this issue, but I feel very lucky to have the opportunity to kind of take all of these bits and pieces and present them in a way that is inspiring and digestible for people, you know, because that's, I feel like being a storyteller and almost a translator, like take all this stuff and put it together and then send it out to the world. That's the beauty of filmmaking that I'm learning. It's very different when you're telling that story with stills and a lot of the work I've done as a photographer has been very commercial. That's how I make a living. And I've done a lot of weddings and kind of very personal storytelling. But this takes it, you know, ideally, internationally, this is a story I get to tell to the whole world.
And there certainly will be very personal aspects to it because water touches us in that way.
None of us can live without it.
Are you taking more of a journalism viewpoint on this and revealing what you learn and, you know, following up on the facts and that sort of thing, or more of, say, a point of view aspect like you would get with a Michael Moore film, or something sort of straddled in between?
I would go probably straddled in between. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do want to present facts to people. I don't want to get all warm and fuzzy and poetic and skip over all the actual like hard facts, because to me then it doesn't seem as powerful of a message if you're kind of, you know, fuzzy coding it.
Or
and
valid,
so,
yeah, you want.
For example, I read a book called Comfortably Unaware. The author is Dr. Oppenlander. It's a book about food choice and sustainability. And he is an amazing man, and he has dedicated his life to studying how what we choose to eat affects our planet. From all aspects. To me, obviously, I'm most interested in the water aspect. Removing animal products from your diet reduces your water footprint in the biggest way possible. There's nothing else you can do that shrinks your water footprint like changing your diet to a plant-based
diet. It's really surprising if you look into the facts how much water is used for our protein products.
It's wild. So then I want to share that, but I also want to share the other – you know, so for those who do choose to continue eating meat, is there a way we can do that that is sustainable? So let's talk to some folks from the Savory Institute. Their big thing is holistic land management, right? Mimicking the movement of ancient grazing herds to restore the health of the soil so that the soil can then hold water. And so in that sense, the livestock becomes beneficial as opposed to detrimental. So let's look at that also, because I'm not making a vegan movie, but I also do want to talk about why that food choice is important. And if you are going to eat meat, why, you know, choosing meat that has been holistically raised is the most gentle way to interact with the environment through your food choice. So it's been really interesting because there's just so much out there.
Yeah.
And
you could do an entire feature length film
just on that.
Just on that aspect.
And so many
of it,
people
right?
have, you know, like there's plenty of vegan films and there's plenty of food films and there's plenty of everything. But my goal with this is to take all those bits and pieces and put them together and present them and present facts to people of, you know, what are some solutions that are working to heal our soil and help our help, really it's the water, but healthy soil can hold water. How? And unhealthy soil can't. So,
you're in sort of the booking, like the booking phase right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I am.
Getting the people that you want to talk and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Are you finding that challenging, or are people running at you and saying?
Some people don't want to talk already. And I can respect that. And I mean, I have no choice really, but to just say, okay, thank you. I respect that. And that's part of the really kind of exciting and interesting thing about filmmaking too, because Dr. Oppenlander really wants to talk and Dan Beard really wants to talk, you know, and these people who are really revolutionaries in these ideas that not everybody wants to hear and not everybody wants to talk about, but this is real and this is working, and so let's talk about it. Those are the people who are like, yes, I would love to be in your film. And we have a lot of, like, for example, locally, a lot of people blame all of our water problems on the wineries. And of
locally,
course,
the Central Coast.
Locally here on the Central Coast, yeah. And of course the wineries are using water, but so is everybody else. And if you're really that upset, find out who's doing it in a sustainable way. Find out who the SIP certified wineries are. Find out who the biodynamic wineries are and buy your wine from them, because they are behaving in a really sustainable way and they probably use a lot less water than you think, you know? And I'm finding that kind of across the board, like with the almond growers and with, I mean, there's so much information out there, and a lot of times all it takes is to just kind of scratch a little at the surface, as you know, working in journalism, and you find out what's really going on. Or maybe you find out that people don't want you to know what's really going on, and then you can kind of take a tangent.
Sometimes it's the people that don't want to talk are the ones that then I get this overwhelming desire that I then have to talk to them, because I'm like, why don't they want to talk?
Exactly.
If they're just shy people, but they really have a great point of view, I want to find that out and convince them, you know, why it's beneficial for them to talk to me.
Right.
If I'm getting a sense that they don't want to talk to me because they're hiding something,
yes.
then I'm
exactly.
like, I need to get to the bottom of this.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's always interesting that
way. And that piece of it's really new for me, because I've been a photographer. I haven't been a photojournalist. I mean, that's very much my style, is to approach whatever I'm shooting in a very photojournalistic way. But I've been much more of a commercial photographer. So kind of digging in on these stories for me is really exciting. And consulting with people who have done this to make sure I'm approaching it professionally and with integrity is really important to me too. So,
what sort of timeline are we looking at when we would actually be able to see this in a theater? I would imagine it would play like at a place like the Palm or something.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm planning to film from now, mid-March through March of next year. So I'm giving myself an entire year now that I have the funding from the Kickstarter to really dive in and work on this film with as much hours of every day as I possibly can. And then I'll spend a few months in post-production, and then I'll spend the very end of 2017 getting this film out to the film festival circuit for inclusion in the 2018 film festivals all over. You know, the Slow Film Fest and hopefully Sundance. I want to go big. You know,
yeah.
I want to get it out there.
It takes longer than people think. So when you're at a film festival in 2018, there's been this years-long process.
Yes.
Hopefully we're well beyond the drought at that point. And
that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And all right, let's, you know, fingers crossed. And people can watch your film with eyes on how to mitigate the worst possible scenario when the next one comes, because there will be a next one. We know that.
Well, and also on that comment, hopefully the drought is over. But realistically, we're dealing with a warming climate and a growing population. So focusing, like, this film will never be irrelevant, because our population is going to continue to grow. And our climate, unfortunately, is probably going to continue to change. And so learning how to interact with all of our resources in a more responsible way is something that will benefit all of us for the rest of our lives.
So final question, how did you come to collaborate with Erin English for the film's title track?
That's a really good question. She's a soul sister, and we've known each other for a long time. And she literally called me one day and said, I wrote a song for you. And I was like, shut the front door. You know, you did not.
How often does somebody hear that?
She said, yeah, I did. I'm so inspired by your project. And I had to. And so she came over one night and she sung this song a cappella in my living room, and I just, like, tears, you know. And she's such a champion of the earth, and she's such a champion for just good music, like real music and soulful musicians. And she's in this, you know, real time. Like, she wants to help in any way she can. She wants to write more music. She wants to help with the audio at the end of production and along the way. And she is very well versed in sustainability herself. So she's also been a really great go-to, kind of to bounce ideas off of, and where should I go with this, and who should I talk to for this. So she was like, hi, I wrote this for you. I want to help. Let me know how I can help. That's the Cliff Notes version. She's amazing.
Well, Brittany App, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. Brittany App, the filmmaker behind an upcoming feature-length documentary, Where There Once Was Water. Thank you so much for being with us today on Issues and Ideas.
Thank you.
And this is Issues and Ideas here on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White. We'll end this segment with a little more of the film's title track by local singer-songwriter Erin English.